your china plates with pink flowers and lacy scallops around the edge. I broke out with happiness because life seemed headed back to normal. Rosaline put a beeswax candle on the table, and I believe that was the first candlelit meal of my entire life. Here was the menu. Smothered chicken, rice and gravy, butter beans, sliced tomatoes, biscuits, and candlelight. We had barely started in when Rosaline said to June,
"So, are you gonna marry Neil or not?"
August and I both stopped chewing and sat up.
"That's for me to know, and you to find out," June answered.
"And how are we supposed to find out if you won't tell us?"
said Rosaline. When we'd finished the food, August produced 4 bottles of ice-cold Coca-Cola from the refrigerator, along with 4 little packages of salted peanuts. We watched her pop the tops off the Cokes.
"What the heck is this?" said June.
"It's Lily's and my favorite dessert," August told her, smiling over at me. "We like to pour our peanuts straight into the bottle, but you can eat yours separately if you prefer."
"I think I prefer mine separate," said June, rolling her eyes. "I wanted to make a cobbler," Rosaline told June, "but August said it was gonna be Cokes and peanuts."
She said Cokes and peanuts the way you might say snot and boogers. August laughed.
"They don't know a delicacy when they see one, do they, Lily?"
"No, ma'am," I said, shaking the peanuts into my bottle, where they caused a little reaction of foam, then floated on the brown liquid. I drank and munched with the glory of salt and sweet in my mouth at the same time, all the while looking toward the window at birds flying home to their nests and moonlight just starting to pour down on the Midlands of South Carolina, this place where I was tucked away with 3 women whose faces shone with candle glow. When we had drained the Cokes, we went to the parlor to say our Hail Marys together for the first time since May had died. I knelt on the rug by June, while Rosaline, as usual, helped herself to the rocker. August stood beside Our Lady and folded May's suicide letter so it resembled a tiny paper airplane. She wedged it into a deep crevice that ran down the side of Our Lady's neck. Then she patted Black Mary's shoulder and let out a long sigh that made the airless room feel alive again, and said,
"Well, that's that."
I'd been staying up in May's room with Rosaline ever since May died, but when Rosaline and I started to climb the stairs that night, on impulse, I said,
"You know what? I think I'll move back into the honey house."
I found out I'd missed having a room to myself. Rosaline put her hands on her waist.
"Good Lord. All that fuss you made about me moving out and leaving you. Now here you are wanting to leave me."
Actually, she didn't care one bit that I wanted to move out. She just couldn't pass up a chance to give me a hard time.
"Come on, I'll help you carry your stuff over there," she said.
"You mean now?"
"No time like the present," she told me.
I guess she'd missed having a room to herself, too. After Rosaline left, I looked around my old room in the honey house. It was so quiet. All I could think was how this time tomorrow the truth would be out, how everything would change. I got my mother's photograph and the Black Mary picture from my bag, ready to show August. I slid them under my pillow, but when I turned out the light, fear filled up my hard, narrow bed. It told me all the ways life could go wrong. It had me in a girls' prison camp in the Florida Everglades. Why the Everglades, I don't know, except I've always thought that would be the worst place to be in prison. Think of all the alligators and snakes, not to mention heat worse than we had here, and people had been known to fry not just eggs, but bacon and sausage on South Carolina sidewalks. I could not imagine breathing in Florida. I would be down there suffocating and never see August again. It was fear all night long. I would have given anything to be back in May's room listening to Rosaline snore. The next morning I slept late,
considering the on-and-off night I'd had, plus I'd been falling into lazy habits without the honey house to keep me industrious. The smell of fresh-baked cake wafted all the way from the pink house to my cot, curled into my nostrils, and woke me up. When I got to the kitchen, there were August, June, and Rosaline, dusted with flour, baking these small one-layer cakes the size of honey buns. They were singing while they worked, singing like the Supremes, like the Marvelettes, like the Crystals wiggling their butts to da-do-ron-ron. "What are y'all doing?" I said, grinning from the doorway. They stopped singing and giggled, giving each other little shoves and nudges.
"Well, look who's up," said Rosaline.
June had on lavender petal pushers with daisy buttons up the sides, the likes of which I'd never seen before. She said, "We're baking cakes for Mary Day. It's about time you got over here and helped us. Didn't August tell you this was Mary Day?" I glanced at August. No, ma'am, she didn't. August, who was wearing one of May's aprons, the one with ruffles trailing over the shoulders, wiped her hands across the front and said, "I guess I forgot to mention it. We've been celebrating Mary Day around here every August for 15 years. Come on and get your breakfast, and then you can help us. We've got so much to do, I don't know whether we're going to make it." I filled a bowl with Rice Krispies and milk, trying to think over the snap-crackle conversation it was having with itself. How was I supposed to have a life-altering talk with August with all this going on? 1,000 years ago, women were doing this exact same thing, said August, baking cakes for Mary on her feast day. June looked at my blank face. Today is the Feast of the Assumption, August 15th. Don't tell me you've never heard of that. Oh, sure, the Feast of the Assumption. Brother Gerald preached on that every other Sunday. Of course I'd never heard of it. I shook my head. We didn't really allow Mary at our church except at Christmas. August smiled and dunked a wooden drizzle into the vat of honey, which sat on the counter by the toaster oven. While she spun honey across the tops of a fresh pan of cakes, she explained to me in detail how the Assumption was nothing less than Mary rising up to heaven. Mary died and woke up, and the angels carried her up there in swirling clouds. May is the one who started calling it Mary Day, said June. It's not just about the Assumption, though, August said, shoveling the cakes onto the wire racks. It's a special remembrance for our own Lady of Chains. We reenact her story, plus we give thanks for the honey crop. The Daughters of Mary come. It's our favorite 2 days of the year. You do this for 2 days? We start this evening and finish tomorrow afternoon, said August. Hurry up with your cereal, because you've got to make streamers and garlands, hang the Christmas lights, put out the candle holders, wash the wagon, and get out the chains. I was thinking, whoa, back up, wash the wagon, hang the Christmas lights, get out the chains? The chains? The knock on the back door came as I was putting my bowl in a sink.
If this isn't the best smelling house in Tiburon, I'll be a monkey's uncle, said Neil, stepping inside. Well, I guess you're saved from that special relationship then, June said.
She offered him a honey cake, but he shook his head, which was a dead giveaway right there that he had something on his mind. Neil did not refuse food, ever. He stood in the middle of the floor, shuffling from one foot to the other.
What are you doing here? June asked.
He cleared his throat, rubbed his sideburns.
I came over here hoping for a word with you.
This sounded so stiff coming out of his mouth that June narrowed her eyes and studied him a second.
Are you all right?
I'm fine.
He put his hands in his pockets, took them out.
I just want a word with you.
She stood there waiting.
Well, I'm listening, she said.
I thought we could take a drive.
She looked around the kitchen. If you haven't noticed, I'm up to my ears in work, Neil.
I can see that, but...
Look, just tell me what it is, June said, starting to get into one of her huffs.
What is so all-fired important?
I glanced at August, who had her lips screwed over to the side, trying to look busy. Rosaline, on the other hand, had stopped all semblance of work and looked from June to Neil. Back to June.
Hell, he said. I came over here planning to ask you, for the 100th time, to marry me.
I dropped my spoon in the sink. August laid down the honey drizzle. June opened her mouth and closed it without anything coming out. Everyone just stood there.
Come on. Don't mess up your time to live.
The house creaked, like old houses do. Neil glanced at the door. I felt my shirt dampen all under my arms. I had the sensation I used to get in fifth grade when the teacher would write some nonsense word on the blackboard like "Pentiahel," and we had 2 minutes to unscramble it and find the word "elephant" before she dinged her bell. I used to break out in a sweat trying to beat the clock. I had that feeling now, like Neil was going to walk out the door before June could unscramble the answer in her heart. Rosaline said,
Well, don't just stand there with your mouth open, June. Say something.
June stared at Neil, and I could see the struggle in her face, the surrender she had to make inside, not just to Neil, but to life. Finally, she let out a long, sighing breath.
All right, she said.
Let's get married.
Rosaline slapped her thigh and burst out with a whoop, while August broke into the biggest smile I believe I'd ever seen on her face. Me, I just looked from one person to another, trying to take it in. Neil walked over and kissed June right on the mouth. I didn't think they were ever going to come up for air. When they did, Neil said,
We're going to the jewelry store this minute and pick out a ring before you change your mind.
June cast a look back at August.
Well, I hate to leave them with all this work, she said, but I could tell she didn't mind a bit.
Go on, August said.
When they'd left, August, Rosaline, and I sat down and ate honey cake while it was still hot, talking over what had just happened. We had all these chores facing us, but some things you have to sit and mull over before you can go on.
We said, Did you see the look on Neil's face? Can you believe that kiss?
Mostly we just stared at each other, saying, June's getting married. Getting ready for Mary Day was nonstop work. First, August got me started on the streamers. I cut packages of thick blue and white crepe paper into strips till I had rubbed blisters on both thumbs. I formed little twists in the edges with my fingers to give them a curled effect, then dragged the stepladder into the yard and hung them from the myrtle trees. I clear-cut the gladiolus bed and made a 6-foot garland by wiring the blossoms to a piece of string, which I thought I never would get right. When I asked August what I was supposed to do with it, she said,
Drape it around the wagon.
Well, of course. Why didn't I think of that? Next, I rummaged around in the hall closet for the Christmas lights, which she had me wind around the bushes by the back porch steps, not to mention all the extension cords I had to rig. As I worked, Zack pushed the lawnmower, shirtless. I set up the card tables beside the myrtle trees so the streamers would drift over and tickle our faces while we ate. I tried not to look at him, his tight skin sparkling with sweat, his dog tag hanging from the chain around his neck, his shorts slung low on his hips. The little tuft of hair starting under his navel. He hoed up a big infestation of cabbage weeds without even being asked to. He swung the hoe with a blaze of angry grunts while I sat on the steps and dug candle wax out of 2 dozen glass holders. I refilled them with fresh candles and set them all around on the grass, under the trees, mostly in the little holes of earth where the cabbage weeds had grown. Up on the back porch, August cranked the ice cream churn. Beside her feet sat a coil of chains. I stared at it.
What's that for?
You'll see, she said.
At 6 p.m. I was exhausted from Mary Day goings-on, and the real part hadn't even started. I got the last thing on my list done and was headed to the honey house to get dressed when June and Neil pulled into the driveway. June waltzed up with her hand stuck out so I could admire her ring. I looked it over. And I have to say, Neil had outdone himself. It wasn't that big, really. It was just so pretty. The diamond was tucked inside a scalloped silver setting.
That's the most beautiful ring I've ever seen, I said.
She kept her hand stretched out, turning it this way and that, letting the diamond catch the light.
I think May would have loved it, too, she said.
The first carload of the daughters drove up then, and June sauntered toward them with her hand outstretched. Inside the honey house, I lifted up my pillow to be sure my mother's photograph and her Black Mary picture were still underneath like I'd left them. Feast day or not, tonight had to be the night I got the truth from August. The thought set off a nervous quiver through me. I sat down on the cot and felt things building inside, pushing against my chest. Heading back to the pink house, wearing clean shorts and a top, my hair all combed, I stopped to behold everything. August, June, Rosaline, Zack, Neil, Otis, and all the daughters of Mary stood around on the mowed grass beside the card tables, their laughter low and vibrating. Piles of food. Blue and white streamers rippling in the breezes. The Christmas lights glowed in spirals of color around the porch, and all the candles were lit, even though the sun was still working its way down. Every molecule of air gave off red fire. I said to myself, I love this place with my whole heart. The daughters fussed over me, how good I smelled, how exceptional my hair was when it was combed. Lunel said, would you like me to make you a hat, Lily? Really? You'd make me a hat? Where I would wear a Lunel-created hat was a mystery, but I wanted one all the same. At the least, I could get buried in it one day. Of course I'll make you a hat. I'll make you a hat you won't believe. What color would you like? August, who was listening in, said, blue, and winked at me. First we ate. By now I'd learned eating was a high priority with the daughters. When we finished, the redness had seeped from the day and night was arranging herself around us, cooling things down, staining and dyeing the evening purple and blue-black. Rosaline brought out the platter of honey cakes and set them on one of the tables. August motioned us to stand around the table in a circle. The Merry Day program was underway. These are Mary's honey cakes, cakes for the Queen of Heaven, August said. She took one of them in her hand and, pinching off a piece, held it before Mabel Lee, who stood next to her in the circle. August said, this is the body of the Blessed Mother. Mabel Lee closed her eyes and opened her mouth, and August laid the cake on her tongue. After Mabel Lee had swallowed, she did the same thing August had done, snipped off a piece and gave it to the next person in the circle, who happened to be Neil. Mabel Lee, who could not have measured 5 feet tall in spike heels, practically needed a stepladder to get up to his mouth. Neil crouched down and opened wide. This is the body of the mother, Mabel Lee said, and popped it in. I did not know one thing, really, about the Catholic Church, but somehow I felt sure the Pope would have keeled over if he'd seen this. Not Brother Gerald, though. He wouldn't have wasted time feigning, just gotten busy arranging the exorcism. Me, I had never seen grown-ups feed each other, and I watched with a feeling I might burst out crying. I don't know what got to me about it, but for some reason, that circle of feeding made me feel better about the world. As life would have it, the one who fed me turned out to be June. Opening my mouth, closing my eyes, and waiting for the body of the mother, I heard June's whisper brush my ear. I'm sorry for being hard on you when you first got here. And then the sweetness of honey cake spread through my mouth. I wished it could have been Zack standing next to me so I could lay the cake on his tongue. I would have said, I hope this softens you toward the world. I hope it brings you a tender feeling. Instead, I got to give the pinch of cake to Cressy, who ate it with her eyes closed. After we were all fed, Zack and Neil went to the parlor and returned carrying Our Lady of Chains. Otis followed after them, lugging the pile of chain. They stood her upright in the red wagon. August leaned over to me. We're going to reenact the story of Our Lady of Chains. We're taking her over to the honey house and chaining her in there for the night. I thought, Our Lady is spending the night in the honey house with me. As August pulled the wagon slowly across the yard, Zack and Neil braced Our Lady with their hands. If I do say so, the flower garland around the wagon set the whole thing off. June carried her cello, while the daughters trailed the wagon single file, carrying burning candles. They sang Mary, Star of the Sea, Mary, Brightest Moon, Mary, Comb of Honey. Rosaline and I brought up the rear, toting candles too, trying to hum along since we didn't know the words. I cupped one hand around the flame of my candle to be sure it didn't blow out. At the door of the honey house, Neil and Zack lifted the statue out of the wagon and carried her inside. Sugar Girl nudged Otis with her elbow, and he stepped up and helped them get her situated between the extractor and the baffle tank.
"All right," August said. "Now we'll start the last part of our service. Why don't you stand in a semicircle right here around Our Lady?"
June played us a gloomy-sounding song on the cello while August retold Black Mary's story start to finish. When she got to the part about the slaves touching Our Lady's heart and how she filled them with fearlessness and plans of escape, June turned up the volume.
"Our Lady became so powerful," said August, "that the master was forced to put her under house arrest, to chain her in the carriage house. She was cast down and bound up."
"The blessed, blessed mother," mumbled Violet.
Neil and Otis took the chains and started wrapping them around Our Lady. The way Otis tossed the chain around in the candlelight, I was sure it would be a miracle if he didn't kill somebody. August went on.
"But each time the master chained Mary in the carriage house, she would break the chains and return to her people."
August paused. She went around the circle and looked at us one by one, letting her eyes settle on each face like she wasn't in any kind of rush. Then she lifted her voice.
"What is bound will be unbound. What is cast down will be lifted up. This is the promise of Our Lady."
"Amen," said Otis.
June began to play again, this time a more joyful tune, thank goodness. I gazed at Mary, wrapped head to toe in rusted chain. Outside, heat lightning pulsed across the sky. They all seemed to be sunk in their meditating, or whatever it was they were doing. Everyone's eyes were closed, except Zack's. He stared right at me. I glanced at poor shackled Mary. I couldn't bear seeing her like that.
"It is only a reenactment," August had said, "to help us remember. Remembering is everything."
Still, the whole idea wrapped me in sadness. I hated remembering. I turned and walked out of the honey house into the warm hush of night. Zack caught up with me as I reached the tomato garden. He took my hand, and we kept walking, stepping over May's wall, walking into the woods without speaking. The cicadas were going crazy, filling the air with their strange brand of singing. Twice I walked into a spider's web, feeling the fine, transparent threads across my face, and I liked them there, a veil spun from the night. I wanted the river, its wildness. I wanted to strip naked and let the water lick my skin. Suck river stones the way I'd done that night Rosaline and I'd slept by the creek. Even May's death had not ruined the river for me. The river had done its best, I was sure, to give her a peaceful ride out of this life. You could die in a river, but maybe you could get reborn in it too, like the beehive tombs August had told me about. Beneath the trees, moonlight trailed down. I steered us toward the water. Water can be so shiny in the dark. We stood on the bank and watched the moving pockets of light, letting the water sound swell up around us. We were still holding hands, and I felt his fingers tighten around mine. "There was a pond near where I used to live," I said. "Sometimes I would go there to wade in the water. One day, the boys from the next farm were there fishing. They had all these little fish they'd caught fastened onto a stringer. They held me down on the bank and hooked it around my neck, making it too small to pull over my head.
I was shouting, "Let me up, get that off me," but they laughed and said, "What's the matter, don't you like your fish necklace?"
"Goddamn boys," Zack said.
A few of the fish were already dead, but most of them flapped around with their eyes staring at me, looking scared. I realized if I swam out into the water up to my neck, they could breathe. I got as far as my knees, but then I turned back. I was too afraid to go any further. I think that was the worst part. I could have helped them, but I didn't.
"You couldn't have stayed out there in the pond forever," Zack said.
"But I could have stayed a long time. All I did was beg them to undo the stringer. Begged. They said to shut up. I was their fish holder, so I sat there till all the fish died against my chest. I dreamed about them for a year. Sometimes I'd be hooked on the chain along with them."
"I know that feeling," he said.
I looked as far into his eyes as I could see. "Getting arrested." I didn't know how to put it. "What about it?" he said. "It changed you, didn't it?" He stared at the water.
"Sometimes, Lily. I'm so angry I want to kill something."
"Those boys who made me wear the fish, they were angry like that too. Angry at the world, and it made them mean. You have to promise me, Zack, you won't be like them."
"I don't want to," he said.
"Me either." He bent his face close to mine and kissed me. At first it was like moth wings brushing my lips, then his mouth opening on mine. I gave way against him. He kissed me gently, but at the same time hungrily, and I liked how he tasted, the scent of his skin, the way his lips opened and closed. I was floating on a river of light, escorted by fish, jeweled with fish. And even with so much beautiful aching inside my body, with life throbbing beneath my skin and the rushing waves of love taking over, even with all of that, I could feel the fish dying against my heart. When the kiss was over, he looked at me with burning in his face.
"Nobody will believe how hard I'm gonna study this year. That jail cell is gonna make me earn grades higher than I ever got. And when this year is over, nothing can keep me from leaving here and going to college."
"I know you'll do it," I said. "You will." And it wasn't just words. I'm good at sizing up people, and I knew for a fact he would make himself into a lawyer. Changes were coming, even to South Carolina. You could practically smell them in the air, and Zack would help bring them. He would be one of those drum majors for freedom that Martin Luther King talked about. That's how I like to think of Zack now. A drum major. He faced me, and shifting around on his feet, he said,
"I want you to know that I..."
He stopped and looked up into the treetops. I stepped nearer to him. "You want me to know what?"
"That I care about you. I think about you all the time."
It crossed my mind to say there were things he didn't know about me, that he might not care so much if he knew them, but I smiled and said, "I care about you, too.
We can't be together now, Lily. But one day, after I've gone away and become somebody, I'm gonna find you. And we'll be together then."
"You promise?"
"I promise."
He lifted the chain with his dog tag from around his neck and lowered it over my head.
"So you won't forget, okay?"
The silver rectangle dropped down under my shirt, where it dangled, cold and certain, between my breasts. Zachary Lincoln Taylor, resting there, along my heart, wading in up to my neck.
If the Queen were smarter, she would probably be hopelessly neurotic. As is, she is shy and skittish, possibly because she never leaves the hive, but spends her days confined in darkness, a kind of eternal night, perpetually in labor. Her true role is less that of a queen than mother of the hive, a title often accorded to her. And yet, This is something of a mockery because of her lack of maternal instincts or the ability to care for her young. The queen must die, and other affairs of bees and men. Chapter 12. I waited for August in a room. Waiting was a thing I'd had tons of experience doing. Waiting for the girls at school to invite me somewhere, for T-Ray to change his ways, for the police to show up and drag us off to the Everglades prison, for my mother to send a sign of love. Zack and I had hung around outside till the Daughters of Mary finished in the honey house. We'd helped them clean up the mess in the yard, me stacking plates and cups, and Zack folding up card tables. Quinny had smiled and said, "How come you two left before we finished?" "It got too long," said Zack. "So that's what it was," she teased, and Cressy giggled. When Zack left, I slipped back into the honey house and retrieved my mother's photograph and her Black Mary picture from underneath my pillow. Clutching them in my hands, I glided past the daughters as they finished up the dishes in the kitchen. They called to me, "Where you going, Lily?" I hated to be rude, but I found I couldn't answer, couldn't speak a word of idle talk. I wanted to know about my mother. I didn't care about anything else. I marched straight into August's room, a room filled with the smell of beeswax. I switched on a lamp and sat on the cedar chest at the end of her bed, where I folded and unfolded my hands 8 or 10 times. They were cool, damp, with a mind of their own. All they wanted to do was fidget and pop knuckles. I stuck them under my thighs. The only other time I'd been in August's room was the time I'd fainted during the Daughters of Mary meeting and wakened in her bed. I must have been too muddled then to see it, because it all seemed new to me. You could have wandered around in this room for hours and had a field day looking at her stuff. For starters, everything was blue. Bedspread, curtains, rug, chair cushion, lamps. Don't get the idea it was boring, though. She had 10 different shades of it. Sky blue, lake blue, sailor blue, aqua blue, you name a blue. I had the feeling of scuba diving through the ocean. On a dressing table, where less interesting people would have put a jewelry box or a picture frame, August had a fish aquarium turned upside down with a giant piece of honeycomb inside it. Honey had oozed out and formed puddles on the tray underneath. On her bedside tables were beeswax candles, melted down into brass holders. I wondered if they could be the ones I'd personally created. It gave me a little thrill to think so, how I had helped to light August's room when it was dark. I walked over and inspected the books arranged neatly on her bookshelf. The Advanced Language of Beekeeping, Apiary Science, Bee Pollination, Bullfinch's Age of Fable, The Myths of Greece, The Cultivation of Honey, Bee Legends Around the World, Mary Through the Ages. I pulled the last one off the shelf and opened it across my lap, thumbing through the pictures. Sometimes Mary was brunette and brown-eyed, other times blonde and blue-eyed, but gorgeous every time. She looked like a Miss America contestant, a Miss Mississippi. You can usually count on the girls from Mississippi to win. I couldn't help wishing to see Mary in a swimsuit and heels, before her pregnancy, of course. The big shock, though, was all the pictures of Mary being presented with a lily by the angel Gabriel, and every one, where he showed up to tell her she was going to have the baby of babies, even though she wasn't married yet. He had a big white lily for her, as if this was the consolation prize for the gossip she was in for. I closed the book and put it back on the shelf. A breeze moved through the room from the open window. I walked to it and stared out at the dark fringe of trees by the edge of the woods, a half moon wedged like a gold coin into a slot, about to drop through the sky with a clink. Voices filtered through the screen. Women voices. They rose in chirps and melted away. The daughters were leaving. I twisted my hair with my fingers, walked around the throw rug in circles, the way a dog will do before it settles on the floor. I thought about prison movies in which they're about to electrocute some prisoner, wrongly convicted, of course, the camera going back and forth between the poor man sweating in his cell block and the clock creeping toward 12.
I sat down on the cedar chest again. Footsteps landed on the floorboards in the hallway, precise, unhurried steps. August steps. I sat up straighter, taller, my heart starting to beat so I could hear it in my ears. When she stepped into the room, she said, "I thought I might find you here." I had a desire to bolt past her through the door, dive out the window. "You don't have to do this," I told myself, but the wanting rose up. I had to know. "Remember when," I said. My voice came out barely a whisper. I cleared my throat. "Remember when you said we should have a talk?" She closed the door, a sound so final. "No turning back," it said. "This is it," it said. I remember it very well. I laid out the photograph of my mother on the cedar chest. August walked over and picked up the picture. "You are the spitting image of her." She turned her eyes on me, her big flickering eyes with the copper fire inside them. I wished I could look out at the world through them just one time. "It's my mother," I said. "I know, honey. Your mother was Deborah Fontenelle Owens." I looked at her and blinked. She stepped toward me, and the yellow lamplight glazed her glasses so I could no longer make out her eyes. I shifted my position so I could see them better. She dragged the chair from her dressing table over to the cedar chest and sat down facing me. "I'm so glad we're finally going to talk this out." I could feel her knee barely touching mine. A full minute passed without either of us saying a word. She held the picture, and I knew she was waiting for me to break the silence. "You knew she was my mother all along," I said, uncertain whether I felt anger or betrayal or just plain surprise. She placed her hand on mine and brushed her thumb back and forth across my skin. "The first day you showed up, I took one look at you and all I could see was Deborah when she was your age. I knew Deborah had a daughter, but I thought, no, you couldn't be. It was too much to believe that Deborah's daughter would turn up in my parlor. Then you said your name was Lily, and right that minute, I knew who you were." Probably I should have expected this. I felt tears gather in the back of my throat, and I didn't even know why. But you never said a word. How come you didn't tell me?" "Because you weren't ready to know about her. I didn't want to risk you running away again. I wanted you to have a chance to get yourself on solid ground, get your heart bolstered up first. There's a fullness of time for things, Lily. You have to know when to prod and when to be quiet, when to let things take their course. That's what I've been trying to do." It grew so quiet. How could I be mad at her? I had done the same thing, held back what I knew, and my reasons were not the least bit noble like hers. "May told me," I said.
"May told you what?"
"I saw her making a trail of graham crackers and marshmallows for the roaches to follow. My father told me once that my mother used to do the same thing. I figured she'd learned it from May, so I asked her, 'Did you ever know a Deborah Fontenelle?' And she said yes, she did, that Deborah had stayed in the honey house." August shook her head.
"Goodness, there's so much to tell. You remember how I told you I worked as a housekeeper back in Richmond before I got my teaching job? Well, that was in your mother's house."
"My mother's house?" It seemed odd to think of her with a roof over her head. A person who lay on a bed, ate food at a table, took baths in a tub. "You knew her when she was little?"
"I used to take care of her," August said. "I ironed her dresses and packed her school lunch in a paper bag. She loved peanut butter. That's all she wanted, peanut butter Monday through Friday."
I let out my breath, realizing I'd been holding it. "What else did she love?"
She loved her dolls. She would hold little tea parties for them in the garden, and I would make these teeny tiny sandwiches for their plates. She paused, like she was remembering. What she didn't like was schoolwork. I had to stay after her all the time about it, chase her around, calling out spelling words. One time she climbed a tree, hiding up there so she wouldn't have to memorize a poem by Robert Frost. I found her and climbed up there with the book and wouldn't let her come down till she could say the whole thing by heart. Closing my eyes, I saw my mother perched beside August on a tree limb going through each line of Stopping by the Woods on a Snowy Evening, which I myself had had to learn for English. I let my head drop, closed my eyes. Lily, before we talk any more about your mother, I want you to tell me how you came to be here, all right? I opened my eyes and nodded. You said your father was dead. I glanced down at her hand still on mine, afraid she might move it. I made that up, I said. He's not really dead. He just deserves to be dead. Terence Ray, she said. You know my father, too? No, I never met him. Only heard about him from Deborah. I call him T-Ray. Not Daddy. He's not the Daddy type. What do you mean? He yells all the time. At you? At everything in the world. But that's not the reason I left. Then what was it, Lily? T-Ray, he told me my mother... The tears rushed up, and my words came out in high-pitched sounds I didn't recognize. He said she left me, that she left both of us and ran away. A wall of glass broke in my chest, a wall I didn't even know was there. August slid up to the edge of her chair and opened her arms, the way she'd opened them to June that day they'd found May's suicide letter. I leaned into them, felt them close around me. One thing is beautiful beyond my words to say it. August holding you. I was pressed so close to her I felt her heart like a small throbbing pressure against my chest. Her hands rubbed my back. She didn't say, come on now, stop your crying, everything's gonna be okay, which is the automatic thing people say when they want you to shut up. She said, it hurts, I know it does, let it out. Just let it out. So I did. With my mouth pressed against her dress, it seemed like I drew up my whole lifeblood of pain and hurled it into her breast, heaved it with the force of my mouth, and she didn't flinch. She was wet with my crying. Up around her collar, the cotton of her dress was plastered to her skin. I could see her darkness shining through the wet places. She was like a sponge, absorbing what I couldn't hold anymore. Her hands felt warm on my back, and every time I paused to sniff and gasp for a little air, I heard her breathing, steady and even, in and out. As my crying wound down, I let myself be rocked in her breathing. Finally, I pulled back and looked at her, dazed by the force of what had erupted. She ran her finger along the slope of my nose and smiled a sad kind of smile. I'm sorry, I said. Don't be sorry, she said. She went to her dresser and pulled a white handkerchief from the top drawer. It was folded, ironed, with A.B. monogrammed on the front in silvery threads. She dabbed softly at my face. I want you to know, I said. I didn't believe T-Ray when he told me that. I know she never would have left me like that. I wanted to find out about her and prove how wrong he was. I watched her move her hand up under her glasses and pinch the place between her eyes. And that's what made you leave? I nodded. Plus, Rosaline and I got in trouble downtown, and I knew if I didn't leave, T-Ray was gonna half kill me, and I was tired of being half killed. What sort of trouble? I wished I didn't have to go on. I looked at the floor. Are you talking about how Rosaline got the bruises and the cut on her head? All she wanted to do was register her name to vote. August squinted like she was trying to understand.
All right, now, you start at the beginning, okay? Just take your time and tell me what happened.
The best I could, I told her the miserable details, careful not to leave anything out. Rosaline practicing writing her name, the three men taunting her, how she poured snuff juice on their shoes.
A policeman took us to jail, I said, and I heard how strange the words sounded to my ears. I could only imagine how they sounded to August.
Jail, she said. Her bones seemed to soften a little in her body.
They put you in jail? What was the charge?
The policeman said Rosaline assaulted the men, but I was there and she was only protecting herself, that's all.
August's jaw tightened and her back went ramrod straight. How long were you in there?
Me? I didn't stay long. T-Ray came and got me out, but they wouldn't let Rosaline go, and then those men came back and beat her up.
Mother of God, said August. The words hovered over us. I thought of Mary's spirit, hidden everywhere, her heart a red cup of fierceness tucked among ordinary things.
Isn't that what August had said?
Here, everywhere, but hidden. Well, how'd she finally get out? Some things you have to take a deep breath and just say.
I went to the hospital where they'd taken her to get stitches and I sneaked her past the policeman.
Mother of God, she said for the second time. She stood up and walked one loop around the room.
I never would have done it except T-Ray said the man who beat Rosaline was the meanest hater of colored people anywhere, and it would be just like him to come back and kill her. I couldn't leave her in there.
It was scary. My secret spilled out across the room like a garbage truck had backed up and dumped its sorry contents across the floor for her to sort through. But that wasn't what frightened me most. It was the way August leaned back in her chair and looked off toward the window with her gaze skimming the top of my head, looking at nothing but the sticky air, her thoughts a nerve-wracking mystery. A fever broke along my neck.
I don't mean to be a bad person, I said,
and stared at my hands, how they were folded together like hands in prayer.
I can't seem to help it.
You would think I was totally cried out, but tears beaded again along my lids.
I do all the wrong things. I tell lies all the time. Not to you. Well, I have, but for good reasons. And I hate people. Not just T-Ray, but lots of people. The girls at school, and they haven't done anything to me except ignore me. I hate Williford Marchant, the poet of Tiburon, and I don't even know her. Sometimes I hate Rosaline because she embarrasses me, and when I first came here, I hated June.
A flood of silence now. It rose like water. I heard a roar in my head, rain in my ears.
Look at me. Put your hand back on mine. Say something.
By now my nose was running along with my eyes. I was sniffling, wiping my cheeks, unable to stop my mouth from spewing out every horrible thing I could drum up about myself. And once I was finished, well, if she could love me then, if she could say, Lily, you're still a special flower planted on the earth, then maybe I would be able to look in the mirrors in her parlor and see the river glistening in my eyes, flowing on despite the things that had died in it.
But all of that, that's nothing, I said.
I was on my feet, needing to go someplace, but there was no place to go. We were on an island. A floating blue island in a pink house where I spilled out my guts and then hoped I wasn't tossed out to sea to wait for my punishment. August was looking at me, waiting. I didn't know if I could say it.
It was my fault she died. I killed her.
I sobbed and dropped straight down onto my knees on the rug. It was the first time I'd ever said the words to another person, and the sound of them broke open my heart.
Probably one or two moments in your whole life, you will hear a dark, whispering spirit, a voice coming from the center of things. It will have blades for lips, and will not stop until it speaks the one secret thing at the heart of it all.
kneeling on the floor, unable to stop shuddering. I heard it plainly. It said, "You are unlovable, Lily Owens. Unlovable. Who could love you? Who in this world could ever love you?" I sank farther down, onto my heels, hardly aware of myself, mumbling the words out loud. "I'm unlovable." When I looked up, I saw dust particles floating in the lamplight, August standing, looking down at me. I thought she might try to pull me to my feet, but instead she knelt beside me and brushed the hair back from my face. "Oh, Lily," she said. "Child." "I accidentally killed her," I said, staring straight into her eyes. "Listen to me now," said August, tilting my chin to her face. "That's a terrible, terrible thing for you to live with. But you are not unlovable. Even if you did accidentally kill her, you are still the most dear, most lovable girl I know. Why, Rosaline loves you. May loved you. It doesn't take a wizard to see Zack loves you. And every one of the daughters loves you. And June, despite her ways, loves you too. It just took her a while longer because she resented your mother so much."
"She resented my mother? But why?" I said, realizing that June must have known who I was all along too.
"Oh, it's complicated. Just like June. She couldn't get over me working as a maid in your mother's house." August gave her head a shake. "I know it wasn't fair, but she took it out on Deborah, and then on you. But even June came around to loving you, didn't she?"
"I guess," I said.
"Mostly, though, I want you to know. I love you, just like I loved your mother."
August stood up, but I stayed where I was, holding her words inside me.
"Give me your hand," she said, reaching down. Getting to my feet, I felt dizzy around the edges, that feeling like you've stood up too fast. All this love coming to me, I didn't know what to do with it. I wanted to say, "I love you too. I love you all." The feeling rose up in me like a column of wind, but when it got to my mouth, it had no voice, no words. Just a lot of air and longing.
"We both need a little breather," August said, and she plodded toward the kitchen.
August poured us glasses of ice water from the refrigerator. We took them to the back porch, where we sat in the porch swing, taking little gulps of coolness and listening to the chains creak. It's surprising how soothing that sound can be. We hadn't bothered to turn on the overhead light, and that was soothing too, just sitting in the dark. After a few minutes, August said, "Here's what I can't figure out, Lily. How you knew to come here." I pulled the wooden picture of Black Mary from my pocket and handed it to her.
"It belonged to my mother," I said. "I found it in the attic the same time I found her photograph."
"Oh, my Lord," she said, her hand going up to the side of her mouth. "I gave this to your mother not long before she died."
She set her water glass on the floor and walked across the porch. I didn't know whether to keep talking, so I waited for her to say something. And when she didn't, I went and stood beside her. She had her lips tight together and her eyes scanning the night. The picture was clutched in her hand, but her hand dangled by her side. It took a full minute for her to pull it up so we could both stare at it.
"It has Tiburon SC written on the back of it," I said.
August turned it over.
"Deborah must have written that."
Something close to a smile passed over her face.
"That would have been just like her. She had an album full of pictures, and she'd write on the back of every single one of them the place it was taken,
even if it was her own house. She handed me the picture. I stared at it, letting my finger move across the word Tiburon.
Who would have thought?
August said. We went and sat in the swing, where we rocked back and forth, making little pushes on the floor with our feet. She stared straight ahead. Her slip strap had fallen down to her elbow and she didn't even notice. June always said that most people bit off more than they could chew, but August chewed more than she bit off. June loved to tease August about the way she pondered things, how one minute she was talking to you, and the next she had slipped into a private world where she turned her thoughts over and over, digesting stuff most people would choke on. I wanted to say, "Teach me how to do that. Teach me how to take all this in." Thunder rumbled over the trees. I thought of my mother's tea parties, tiny sandwiches for a doll's mouth. And it washed me in sadness. Maybe because I would have loved so much to have attended something like that. Maybe because all the sandwiches would have been peanut butter, my mother's favorite, and I wasn't even that crazy about it. I wondered at the poem August had made her learn, whether it had stuck with her after she got married. Had she lain in her bed listening to T-Ray snore, reciting it while she fell asleep, wishing to God she could run away with Robert Frost? I gave a sideways glance at August. I forced my mind back to that moment in her bedroom when I'd confessed the worst of human things. Upon hearing it, she'd said, "I love you, just like I loved your mother." "All right, then," said August, like we'd never stopped talking. "The picture explains how you came to Tiburon, but how in the world did you find me?" "That was easy," I said. "We hadn't been here any time before I spotted your black Madonna honey, and there was the same picture on it as my mother had. The black Madonna of Breznishar of Bohemia." "You said that real nice," August told me. "I've been practicing." "Where'd you see the honey?" "I was in that Frogmore Stew General store out on the edge of town. I asked this man in a bow tie where he got it. He's the one who told me where you lived." "That would be Mr. Grady." She shook her head. "I swear, it makes me think you were meant to find us." "I was meant to. I didn't have a doubt about it. I just wish I knew where I was meant to end up." I looked down at our laps, how both of us had our hands laying palm side up on top of our thighs, like we were both waiting for something to drop in. "So why don't we talk some more about your mother?" she said. I nodded. Every bone in my body was cracking with the need to talk about her. "Anytime you need to stop and take another break, you just tell me." "All right," I said. What was coming I couldn't imagine. Something that required breaks? Breaks for what? So I could dance for joy? So she could revive me after I fainted dead away? Or was the idea of break so I could let the bad news sink all the way in? A dog started barking way off in the distance. August waited for it to stop, then said, "I started working for Deborah's mother in 1931. Deborah was 4 years old. The cutest child, but always into something. I mean a real handful. For one thing, she used to walk in her sleep. One night she walked outside and climbed a ladder the roofers had left leaning against the house. Her sleepwalking nearly drove her mother crazy." She laughed. "And your mother had an imaginary friend. You ever had one?" I shook my head. "She called hers Tika T. She would talk to her out loud like she was standing right there in front of us, and if I forgot to set a place for Tika T at the table, Deborah would throw a fit. Once in a while, though, I'd set a place and she'd say, 'What are you doing? Tickety's not here. She's off starring in the movies.' Your mother loved Shirley Temple." "Tickety," I said, wanting to feel that on my tongue. "That Tickety was something," August said. "Whatever Deborah struggled with, Tickety could do it perfectly.
Tickets he made hundreds on her school papers, got gold stars in Sunday school, made a bed, cleaned a plate. People told your grandmother, Sarah was her name, that she ought to take Deborah to this doctor in Richmond who specialized in children with problems. But I told her, don't worry about it.